let's stay on this idea of the Constitution and the First Amendment. So
yeah.
Outside of religion, there's another thing in that First Amendment, which was freedom of speech. And the people of America right now are at an inflection point, a crossroads with that point, that direct point. Their speech, their open debate has been whittled away, has been chipped away at and outright censored over the last 3 years in ways that we've never seen before, particularly in the area of health. And that is why we've had the hardest mandated medicine push the world has ever seen.
Yeah.
And this whittling away of free speech there's been an open purpose of the people doing that to change people's thinking and behaviors. Now, we have to have an open debate about this. And let's start with the commissioner of the FDA right now, Robert Califf. So he was a paid consultant, a longtime paid consultant with Merck, J&J, GlaxoSmithKline, Eli Lilly. He was also a lead strategy and policy advisor for Alphabet's health subsidiaries. Now, Alphabet's a holding company. They have Google in there, a lot of Google companies as well, but he was a full-time head of strategy and policy for Google's life science and health divisions. So we have in Califf, he's only been there for just over a year now at the FDA as this position. We have a curious new hybrid. We have a three-way revolving door with big tech, big pharma, and big government.
Yeah.
And he has something to say about this debate around health. Take a listen.
All right.
One thing I learned in my work at Alphabet, which I did between my two FDA stints, Google would be the company people recognize within the Alphabet family. You know, people come to the clinician, they have a very limited amount of time, there's a little bit of discussion, then they leave, they're immediately inundated with information they're getting on the internet. If you're not thinking about that, talking with your patients about it, asking them where they're getting their information, you're really missing the 95% of the time they're getting other information compared to the 1% of time that they're spending with you as a clinician.
Hmm. How did your experience working in the tech industry, working at Alphabet, impact how you think about the role of the tech industry in helping try to stop some of this misinformation or disinformation?
I think there is a real need for better regulation of how we deal with this complex information.
Hmm.
You know, if our health was better than anyone else's in the world, I'd say, okay, we'll just work this out over time.
Hmm.
But our life expectancy is going in the wrong direction, and we need to think hard about what we can do about it.
I mean, I have to say it's the same argument I make, because you're killing us. The FDA, the CDC is poisoning us on a constant basis. Amazing that he thinks it's those that are trying to resist that are what's causing the health problems.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's further conversation during that interview. This is one of the headlines that came out of that interview. FDA commissioner calls for crackdown on health misinformation, claims it reduces life expectancy. He says in this article and in that interview, why aren't we using medical products as efficiently or effectively as our peer countries, Califf said. A lot of it has to do with choices that people make because of the things that influence their thinking. Well, let me just hold on to that point for a second and go to that. Only the United States and New Zealand allow direct-to-consumer marketing.
That's right.
So where is that in the conversation? And then let's talk about how much pharmaceutical companies spend worldwide. I have a chart here I want to show you. The United States makes up roughly 41% of total pharmaceutical spending worldwide. China
Wow.
comes in second with a market share of nearly 12%. But understand, China has 1.4 billion people, roughly. The United States has just under 332 million. So you can see the offset there of the spending. And so I don't know what he's talking about, that we're not using the pharmaceutical products enough, or we're not taking them enough, or people are getting their information in strange ways. The United States is over-pharma'd. I mean, this would be the exemplary
yeah.
country if there was ever one on the globe. So let's
yes,
just look
pharma
back
saves, it should, we should be the healthiest people in the world. We are drugged more than anyone else in the world, using far more drugs on every single level there is, as you said, direct-to-consumer marketing. And amazing when he talks about, like, social media. Social media is not where you're getting inundated. I look at Facebook. I don't see this on Twitter. But on my television, every freaking commercial break and every sitcom is talking about how we're on drugs and need more drugs to survive. It's total insanity, and it's killing us.
And we have just been through the hardest influence push, censorship push around the health conversation. So
yeah.
what he's talking about, we need more of. We just had the biggest one in the world, and the history of the world when it comes to the digital aspect of this. And let's just go through what we had. Now, he's calling for a double down on this because I guess it didn't work. But let's look at this. Let's look at the CDC. The CDC provided $156 million in funding. Here's a little infographic. And this is a fiscal year of 2021 to 500 plus other partners at the national, state, and local levels. So you can see that this influence here. And this is all funding for partners specifically for increasing vaccine confidence and uptake. So this is what we're looking at. You can see there that little red box is the CDC Foundation. Interestingly enough, that's a nonprofit organization that was created by Congress as a go-between. So instead of the CDC directly interacting with big pharma or big tech, which it wouldn't be that good with the integrity piece, they have the CDC Foundation, this nonprofit that's a go-between. So this nonprofit can interact directly with any corporations it wants, any NGOs, and do this type of work. So that's interesting. But then we have studies upon studies of hired out third parties saying, well, if we were to censor, how would we go about doing that? What would that look like? We have Stanford's Virality Project. Now, this was a pilot program. Here's one of the headlines that came out of this. Latest Twitter files tackle great COVID-19 lie machine flagging true content as disinformation. This Virality Project was a 7-month project from Stanford University to monitor anti-vaccine narratives, as they call it, online. And what happened was journalist Matt Taibbi, he gained access to the Twitter files. These are the internal files, the emails that were going back and forth before Elon Musk's takeover. And he found some curious things. This is what he reports. Reports of vaccinated individuals contracting COVID-19 anyway, natural immunity, suggesting COVID-19 leaked from a lab, or even worrisome jokes, all were characterized as potential violations, he writes, or disinformation events by the Virality Project, a sweeping cross-platform effort to monitor billions of social media posts by Stanford University, federal agencies, and a slew of often state-funded NGOs. But here, Dell, is the golden nugget. Virality Project, he writes, emails were found in the Twitter files describing stories of true vaccine side effects as actionable content. It says true content which might promote vaccine hesitancy. That's the bullet point. Underneath that, it says viral posts of individuals experiencing vaccine hesitancy or stories of true vaccine side effects. This content is not clearly mis- or disinformation, but it may contain malinformation, exaggerated or misleading. Also included in this bucket are often true posts which could fuel vaccine hesitancy.
I hate making this comparison, but I have to. I mean, this is what happens when you have Nazi Germany and some journalist wants to say, look, there's these concentration camps, and though it's true, it's going to create hesitancy towards our job to try and, you know, clean the bloodline of our nation. I mean, this is how scary this is. They're saying these are true, these are real vaccine injury stories, but people should not be allowed to tell their stories to each other, or they might just start causing hesitancy. This is really, really scary stuff.
Right. And you know, this project, when they talk about it, it's not some neutral project. Let's just go in with an open mind. Let's see what's going on here. Right. Clearly, from those data points, this is a very targeted, actionable events that are targeting true stories. And we've talked, we've interviewed so many parents that have said they've been censored for just telling their story about how their child was harmed by a vaccine, or how, you know, an adult, how they were harmed by a vaccine. No longer. And we've seen Facebook take those stories off. We knew this was happening, but now we have it in black and white. So the Virality Project's over. That was just a fun little experiment. But now what appears to be replacing it is something a little more permanent. This is the Mercury Project. And here's a press release from the Mercury Project. Mercury Project to boost COVID-19 vaccine rates and counter public health mis- and disinformation in 17 countries worldwide. So they're researching. This is a research initiative on how this mis- and disinformation that they call it spread, and also how to combat it. So let's look at the research framework here. Again, all this is not enough for Dr. Califf. We need more of this.
I mean, what I want to point out here is I think the one thing I will agree is I think they named it properly as being, you know, one of the most toxic substances on Earth in mercury. It's exactly the toxicity with which this type of government intervention will be upon our constitutional rights. I mean, it's really, really horrifying, but go on. Yeah.
Yeah, so we look into there, we'll dig into their research framework. This was published on their website on March of 2023. And it says here, I mean, right off the bat, first line, vaccination is an action with clear health benefits. Well, If you're not on board with that, Dell, you're clearly going to be a target for this research initiative. And it goes on to say, but individuals may face a variety of barriers to realizing those benefits, including the direct and opportunity costs required to search for accurate vaccine information. They call those, quote, search costs. And then in others, to assess the accuracy of multiple forms of vaccine information, they call those decision costs, and to acquire the actual vaccination itself, which is the logistical cost. But we have search costs. So that in that, they wrap that in, that takes cognitive efforts. Oh, that's tough. And then in their decision costs, and when people are deciding, they say, well, one way we can help them to decide is to flag content that is misinformation. Well, they've been doing that for 3 years, and it actually had, you know, I can save them a lot of money here. That has the opposite effect of what you're trying to do. And if you're talking about cognitive effort, shouldn't you be investing in the cognition of the people to make their own decisions, to develop their own intuition about what to do with their own bodies? That seems like that would be better for Americans and be a better investment than just labeling some things misinformation. So let's look at who's funding, because it always goes back to who's funding these projects. Yeah. Where's the money coming from? So here's the snapshot on their own website. We have, oh boy, don't say it, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
There we are.
Rockefeller Foundation, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and the National Science Foundation, which is interesting because that is funded each fiscal year by Congress. So now you have direct government, U.S. government involvement in this initiative, which, you know, is very, very interesting and worrisome and problematic. And so we're at a space here where we have literally tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of, you know, we'll call them now citizen journalists. These are just normal people sharing accurate information. Yeah. And we have this censorship industrial complex, as it's been called by Taibbi and Michael Schellenberger, that's coming down and saying, you know, one of the tip of the spears is Robert Califf saying, we need more of this. We need more censorship. And this is the battle right now. So it's the humans really versus the algorithms on this digital space. And right now, the message is getting out. We have this moment of breath where we're winning, where we're really showing people what truth is.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the problem they talk about, right? I mean, they are looking, they've got the sights on us. That's why we are investing a lot in our infrastructure and technology here at the High Wire, so that we'll always be able to broadcast to you. But while you're going to work, you know, all week, we are trying to figure out how they're going to try and stop us from being able to communicate with you. It's getting serious, folks. It's really happening. And when you see these politicians, and when you watch someone like Califf, who is now, he literally in the human body represents this horrific merger between, you know, medicine and AI and technologies. Very, very dangerous and scary things ahead if we don't, you know, take back control of the system and get people that actually believe in our Constitution, our rights to freedom, to be running this country again. It's crazy.